Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my special guest is Daryl James. Daryl is a survivor and experiencer of the off-world operations. He'd had experience for some time. He's been on Mars, and he's a former veteran of the U.S. Navy. So I'm really looking forward to this discussion. Without any further ado, Daryl James, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Yeah, good to have you. I mean, good to be here, James. Thanks for having me. Yeah.
Yeah, well, when I attended the Full Disclosure Now conference, I was sitting there in the audience in the first panel, during the first panel, and I looked at you and I looked over at David Purcell at the other side of the stage, and I go, man, those two guys look really familiar. And so I was just compelled to listen to your stories. Out came all this stuff during the panels, and it awakened rather a lot of memories in me. So, why don't you tell us about your upbringing and how you found yourself involved in all this?
Well, I was born in St. Petersburg, Florida. I mean, I had some difficulties in childhood. I experienced something pretty strange when I was about 11. There was this girl that was this friend of my sister named Jen. And it was a Halloween party. And she used to speak telepathically to like my dad and I. Like she had knew how to do it too. And I found out later that her father was in the mob, and her mother was a Kabbalist. And during this Halloween party, she grabbed me by the wrist and pulled me into her mom's bedroom. And her mom was getting ready for a Halloween party. It was like she looked like Elvira mixed with Stevie Nicks kind of thing is what she was going for. And the mother grabbed me by the mother said to Jen, "You say his father can do it?" And she said, "Yes." And she said, "What about the mother?" And she said, "Not as much." And then she said, "And the sister?" And she said, "No." And she grabbed me by the chin and like lifted my chin up to lock eyes with me. And I don't know, she like activated something. She like opened something up and the whole room became like, like gold, red, orange, flecks of blue and stuff like that. And she shook my head and snapped me out of it. And she said, "You know, you're a powerful little boy, don't you?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "Good, now go play." And after that, it kind of felt like I was, I don't even know, hallucinating, I guess you would say. And I don't think it ever really went away. I think it just took like a couple of years for it to get used to it. And I found out later from like my executive officer that he thought that that's why I was in partial fifth density. Whatever she did, it kind of like pushed me up. And she didn't know, she didn't mean to do it, but it was just something that happened. And that's like a big part of my childhood. Father died of a heart attack when I was, I think, about 19 or 20. Joined the Navy at 21. I was stationed in NMCB 7 at first, Naval Mobile Construction Battalion 7. I joined the Seabees. And then after that, I was stationed in St. Maugen. And in St. Maugen,
Where's
I got
St.
picked up.
Maugen at?
Cornwall, England. It's like right below Wales. It's like the peninsula right below Wales. Yeah. The nearest city is like Newquay. And then Plymouth is like, I don't know, an hour away. Plymouth is a pretty big town. But we're out in the middle of like sheep country and tin mining, lots of sheep, farmers and things like that. And yeah, when the first class petty officer picked me up from the bus station, he said, "This is a weird base." And I said, "What do you mean?" He's like, "I can't explain." He's like, "I don't know, man. It's just a weird base." And my first Monday, maybe Tuesday, I was one of the guys came in and said, "You have to escort some civilian workers from the corporation Siemens." And so I went to the quarter deck, which is like the lobby of the base. And on this base, when you went to the quarter deck, there was like a big tunnel next to it going into like the earth. And I saw the train there once or twice, and it was a maglift. And it was round and white, and it had like a black porthole window, it looked like, and it was kind of flat. And once you get deep enough into the these underground tunnels, there's fans, and it creates like a vacuum. So there's absolutely no wind resistance. So it doesn't matter if the train is aerodynamic or flat or anything. And I was told inside of these maglifts, you have to go into almost like a coffin, almost like a med bed, where it's like it closes and there's a window in front of you, so you don't get claustrophobic. But it's just like a backup in case, the pressurization inside the train goes out for some reason and you're in a vacuum. So you're in like a separate pressurized chamber all to yourself. And then next to that was one of the entrances for the underground base. And it was a big yellow door. And it was like, I don't know, 10 feet high by about 8 feet wide by a couple feet thick. And it said 10,000 tons on it. It was like it could withstand a near hit from a nuclear attack. And it had a wheel at the bottom of the door near the corner, like near the end of the door. And it kind of went on like a track, like a river track that was embedded in the concrete because it would have ripped off the hinges. It was so heavy. And so I went into the quarterdeck, and there were these three civilian workers from the corporation Siemens, and the sliding glass door opened for the underground base. There's another way you can get in through an elevator shaft. You go through the door of the quarterdeck and you make a left, and it takes you down an elevator. And well, as we were walking through, there was like it looked like a metal detector you would see at a, like anywhere. It was just rectangular sides with the top and a little ramp with the black and yellow caution tape so you wouldn't trip. And the first civilian worker said, "I'm not walking through that bloody thing." So he walked around and the rest followed him. So I thought, like, I don't want to go in it. So I tried to walk around too. And there was this British guard, with a weapon on his shoulder, and he's behind like a stainless steel table. And he said, "No, you walk through." And I just thought, well, it's just a metal detector. So I walked through, watched them fix the pump. That was about it. Then on, I had a Friday balls to four watch, which is like 0-100, like 12 a.m. to 4 a.m. And I saw Michael Aquino there. He was a lieutenant colonel. And when I saw him, I thought, like, I saw him on Oprah and Geraldo. He was part of this Presidio case, which was like a big like pedophilia case that went on in the 80s. And I thought, like, he's still in the army. Like, he was pretty gray. And even though he's a lieutenant colonel, he looked like he shouldn't have been in the army anymore. Like, he's like too old. And I walked in, and he was looking through some papers on the quarter deck. He's standing up just in front of the quarter, like the table of the quarter deck, which, it's almost like when you're going into a hotel, there's like a little table. And he said, "Hey, how are you doing?" And I said, "Good evening, sir." And we just had small talk, and he kind of creeped me out. And I just said, "I have to go for another round, sir. And I want another round on the base." And then I had another balls to four watch on a Friday, which isn't like common. It's usually if you're late for watch, because that's like the worst time to have watch on a Friday night, from like midnight to 4 a.m. And I went in, and there was the petty officer of the watch, and he pointed at the computer screen and he said, "What do you think about that?" And it looked just like a stereotypical gray. It was a, it looked like a black and white picture of, like, the big black eyes. It was looking up. And I said, "Well, did you get that off the internet?" And he goes, "No, look." And next to that sliding glass door, there was this very large window that stopped like 6 inches from the floor and 6 inches from the ceiling. And this thing was just standing behind it. And it was light brown. It was, had big black eyes, had a fold of skin from like its tear ducts to its cheekbones. And he said, "Do you mind if it comes in here?" And I said, "Does it mind if I look at it?" And he said, "No," but I heard in my head, "No," like it said, "No." And he, yeah, he said, "Does it mind if it comes in here?" And it walked in. That same guard was behind it. It walked in very like abrupt and robotic. It was just kind of shuffled, and it had to have its hands like in C shapes because it's fingers and palms were so long that it would have drug its hands on the ground. And it had like what looked like a silver pistol in its hand. And there was like I thought it was going to inject me with something. I didn't know what. I was kind of freaked out. It was walking toward, it came towards me so quickly. And there was a Dell computer on the ground, just like a regular government issued Dell computer. And it had that pistol was a drill, and it didn't have to guide the bit in or anything like that. It just kind of hit the screw every time, like a machine, and it was catching all the screws in the other hand, and it lifted the top off, popped up 2 gigs of RAM, put them on the table. There were already two more waiting for it. Grabbed them, put it back into the computer, slid the top back down, and it kind of flicked its wrist and was able to like plant a screw every time in between its fingers. And then it just stood there and looked at me, and I kind of looked over here, and it moved its face for me, and it moved around. And when I looked at its hands, it moved its hands back and forth. And I leaned towards it to try to touch it, and the petty officer of the watch said, "No, don't touch it." And I just got kind of bored with it. It was just standing there motionless looking at me. So it walked back into the underground base, and the guard followed behind it. And he said, "What did you think about that? Do you think you could work around something like that?" And I said, "I don't see why not." And
What year time frame is this?
2004. And he said, "You're smart." And I said, "Really? How smart?" He goes, "Really smart." And I said, "Like what? Like 140, 150 IQ?" And he said, "More like 190, 195." And he showed me the screen, and they're like these color-coded lines that kind of went up and down. And there was one right above me, and he said, "You're the second smartest guy on base." And I was below that one, and then there was a gap, and then there was like the rest of the guys on base. And he started saying things, "You smoke, but you don't have any clots. That's because you drink." And I was like, "How do you know all this?" And he said, "That scanner you walked through, which was like that metal detector. And they called it a scanner, and it knew everything about you as soon as you stepped through." And he started asking me things like, "Do you have any hobbies?" And I said, "Well, I used to play classical guitar." And he's like, "Oh, like that. You'll make officer with your scores, and you have plenty of time to practice." And I didn't know what he was talking about. And then he asked me if I had any tattoos, and I said no. And he goes, "Good, the Germans don't like tattoos." And I said, "Germans?" And he's like, "Yeah, there's Germans up there." And I said, "Up where?" And he goes, "In the moon and beyond." He really didn't call it space. He just said up there. And it was just very confusing. I didn't know what he was talking about, Germans and all this stuff. And and that was about for that night. And went back home and went back to my barracks. And oh, I was pinching myself on the leg the whole time too, as I was seeing this thing. I forgot, and the guy asked me, he said, "What do you think you're dreaming?" And I said, "No, I want to leave a mark in case you erase my mind." And he's like, "Well, we won't erase your memory yet." And when I woke up, I had that, black and blue mark on my thigh from pinching myself so hard. And I woke up, one of the guys, his name was Land. We all called him Lando because he liked the Star Wars, but his name was Orlando. And he said, "What did you think?" And I said, "What?" And he goes, "Big black eyes, long spindly fingers, kind of creepy looking." And I went, "Oh yeah." And I kind of forgot because it was just so unbelievable. You know what I mean? It like seeing this thing, it was really strange and unbelievable. But then one time we're, playing Halo in the barracks, the video game Halo, and one of the guys said, "Yeah, man, I was up in the moon, and there are these brothels up there, and they put these collars on you, and they put you in groups, and if somebody in the group didn't work hard enough, they would shock everybody, and your only motivation to work was sex and all this other stuff. You didn't get paid and things like that." And so I said to him, "I thought maybe they do this to everybody, like say they have a high IQ and you wind up going in the mines or something like that." And I said, "Well, I was talking about, oh, I'm sorry. The next day I talked to the XO, and he came to the garage where I was, and the XO said, he wanted to talk to me, so I grabbed my cover, I went outside, I started talking to him. And at first it was small talk, and then he said, like, pretty amazing, huh? Talking about the little, drone I saw. They called them drones, which they're kind of like they're like a machine, like an organic machine with like a shared consciousness, I guess you would say. And so we went walking and around the base, and he said, how does it feel to have 195 IQ? And I said, this close to 200. And that guy Orlando, he told me that the smartest guy on base was the XO. He had like over a 200. And I said, well, not quite 200, sir. And he goes, well, who told you? And I didn't want to say. I accidentally like told on a friend that I didn't mean to. And I said, it was Orlando, but everybody knows because people were kind of talking about it. It was a small base. And he went on and he said, there's something called this secret space program, the 20 year and back. He said, we put you in the program. You're in the program for 20 years. We send you back in time 20 years, age regress you 20 years, and wipe your memory, and you wake up in bed like nothing happened. And I said, I could believe in mind wiping and time travel, but there's something about age regression I found hard to believe. And I told him, I said, I find that hard to believe, sir. And he's like, well, after what you just saw, you find that hard to believe. And I said, well, touche, sir, but yes. And he said, well, it's true. He was really wasn't interested in trying to convince me any further. And he started talking about, like, with my scores, I'd be able to make commander and a pilot of a 4 kilometer long starship. And he said they look similar to Battlestar Galactica, like the large ships from Battlestar Galactica. And it was just really unbelievable. And it happened so quickly. You know what I mean? It was almost like once they found out you had a high score, they wanted to get you as quickly as possible. So you're kind of like confused and. I didn't believe in any of this stuff. Like, I believed in ETs and stuff, things like that, but I never really thought about it. It wasn't something I really thought about very often. And and when I walked through that scanner, I asked him, I said, sir, that scanner I walked through, it could tell if you had clots. I said, wouldn't that be good if we brought that out to the public, to try to help people out, save lives and everything. And he started going on about population control. And, I said, well, there has to be a side that wants to release this, because my father died of a heart attack. He died of like a widowmaker. And I told him that. And if we had technology like that, it would have saved his life. And I said, well, there has to be a side that like wants to bring this to the public. And he goes, well, there is. And I said, well, if you can get me on that side, I'll do it. And he said, all right. And I shook his hand, saluted him, and he started to walk away. And he said, one more thing. And he was calling me Mr. James, too, which is weird. Only officers call each other Mr. I was a petty officer. And he goes, well, one more thing, Mr. James. You're going to be escorted by a reptile, and he's big. And I really didn't know what to think about that. And so that was the end of that day. And then we had the conversation in the barracks playing Halo. I kind of got it mixed up right there. And then, I was asking that guy who said he was in the mines of the moon. And I thought everybody would get put into the mines. And I said, well, the XO himself came up to me. Did he do that to you? And he goes, no, nobody came up to me. I just volunteered. And then all of a sudden, we heard like a feedback loop in the room. And it said, like, now hear this, now hear this. You now are in violations of the Uniform Code of Military Justice, Section 7 and 8. If you do not stop right now, you will face up to 10 years in prison and $100,000 in fines. That'll be all. And I said, what was that? I said, is there a speaker in here? I was looking around trying to find a speaker. And one of the guys said, with the technology they have, they don't need speakers. And, so nobody wanted to talk about it any further. And the next day, that guy Orlando came up to me and he said, did you hear that voice? And I said, yes. And he goes, you know those rectangular blocks on the radio tower next to the underground base? And I said, yes. And he said, that's 5G. It's a technology they're experimenting with here. And they can create a microwave beam, go into a room They can see everything, they can hear everything, and they can talk to you if they want. So it's like they don't have to bug your house anymore. They can just use the 5G tech. Nobody has to go in and actually put cameras in your house. They could just do it with all these towers. And that was something new to me that I never heard of. And it was like the night before, because I was going to do it on Friday. Volunteer for this program, another Balls to Four watch on a Friday night. And I was in the TV room, and the room across the hall, the door was open. And it's one of the situations where the guy seemed like he wanted me to hear what he was saying, but he was like acting like he was talking to someone else. And he said, they're going to put you into something called the density chamber. He said, most of the ETs we work with are fifth density, and we're only third. So if you're not the same density as them, they'll be much too fast for you, they'll be too strong. He said your IQ goes up 200 points and you become more of a collective once you get pushed up in the fifth density. And so it came to Friday, and I had my working blues on, like black tie, black shirt, black pants, and with the garrison cap. And I, went to the quarter deck, and I had to sign something that was like a contract for a home, like a mortgage. It was very large. And at the beginning, I was trying to read it. And when I read the first couple pages, it was very like strange. It was saying things like, the consciousness of the first party now belongs to the second party. I was talking about consciousness and things like that, like on this, document, on this contract. And I said to the same first class petty officer there, the petty officer of the watch that I saw before, he was blonde. Had a blonde mustache. He was a little overweight. He actually told me he was in the program, and he was there was like a kid that always won the PRT test, like the physical readiness test, which is like most push-ups and sit-ups, you can run the fastest. And he was like 18 or 19. This guy was like 35, and he said, that's me. He's like, I joined the program, and that's me, that's like my younger self. And they talked, and I remember him lecturing him one time after I got out of the program. Like a parent almost, like in so as far as like you meeting yourself on the same timeline, I don't think there's any kind of like worlds aren't gonna collide and the universe is gonna end if that happens. So yeah, I was reading the contract, and he said, if you keep on reading this, we're gonna be here all night. And eventually it got to a point where it was just like an X. He flipped the page, initial here, sign here, flip the page, sign here. And I thought, like, I'm doing this for my dad, and I want to try to help people. I want to bring this tech to people. So I signed the contract. And one of his argument points to the petty officer of the watch is he said, you're already back there, so just sign the damn papers, is what he said to me. So he was saying that I had already come back from the program. And I was being age regressed because they actually have to bring you back 2 weeks early, because the age regression process takes about 2 weeks. And it's like they put you in a stasis chamber, and they give you a series of injections. And every 10 years is about a week. It takes for you to slowly to be age regressed. And everything comes back, like old scars. It's almost like they made a copy of the way your body was. If you're missing a tooth, that comes back, and the drones put the implant back in if you had an implant in before. Scars come back. Everything comes back when they age regress you. And so I signed all the papers, and eventually I sat down, and he got on the phone. He said, send them in. And I waited there for about 5 minutes. I was kind of daydreaming. And then the petty officer of the watch said, all right, go with him. And behind that same window, there was this big reptile. Like, he was huge. He was like dark brown, probably 9, 9.5 feet tall. He had like mohawks kind of going down his head. He had a flat face, a mouth that went straight across and then straight up. He had like gold, like alligator eyes. And he was like so dark brown, he was almost difficult to kind of make out his face. And he's wearing one of those like tight blue suits. And, I stood up and I said, Jesus Christ, he's not going to eat me, is he? And he said, he's much stronger than you and faster than you. If he wanted to kill and eat you, he would have done it by now. I remember it let out a sigh when I said that, like almost like it was like a 9 to 5 to him. Like, he understood what I said, it could hear what I said, and it kind of let about a big sigh. And I said, can you read my mind? And he said, yes, you can read your mind. And so eventually it actually came out of that room and walked into the quarter deck. And I just stood up really slow and tucked my garrison cap and my hat. And there was a different guard this time, like a younger kid. And he had his weapon out, like in his hands. And so I walked behind it and we walked through the, sliding glass doors, went down the elevator, and we were in the underground base. And in the underground base, there was like a white stripe, blue stripe, and red stripe on the floor. And white was secret, blue was top secret, and red was above top secret. And white just went down main hallways, blue went to different rooms, and then red went everywhere. And there were certain hallways that were just dark, no light. And I figured, there were only a red line. And I figured, well, maybe an automatic light comes on when you walk down there. And this reptile immediately went down one of these red only paths, with, and it was a dark hall. And no light came on. So I thought, well, I guess they could see really well in the dark. And I was kind of close to it to keep up with it. And the guard behind me kept on butt stroking me in the back, hitting me with his rifle, kept on hitting me like between his shoulder blades. And it was almost like I didn't know what situation I was in. I was like a slave. Like I didn't realize I was like that was happening to me yet. And he kept on doing it, did it like a second time. And I said, I'm not looking around. Please stop hitting me. And then he did it again. So I turned around, grabbed his weapon. I put my foot behind his feet and I just threw him on his back. And I had his weapon in my hand. And I said, if you hit me with this thing one more time, I'm going to shove up your ass sideways. And it knocked the wind out of him. And I heard behind me, like the reptile, and it said, leave us very deep. It was kind of like the first syllables were inhumanly deep. And then that last syllable, it kind of had to push it out. And it got like a little bit more high pitched. So it was like, leave us. It kind of made it said it that way. And the kid kind of, scurried back on his back and he stood up and he looked at his weapon and looked at me. And I just held it out and he grabbed it and he took off. He just turned around and walked away. And when I turned around, the reptile was like right here. And he was flexing all his muscles and kind of letting me know like how big he really was. And he was like peering over his, chest muscles, his eyes. And the first thing that came to my head was, you're much more civilized than him. I didn't mean what I said before because you're much more civilized than him, saying he's not going to eat me. And the only way you could tell they're like aggravated is if, reptiles, they don't have like muscles on their face. It's like a reptile. Their eyes just get small when they're aggravated with you. And his eyes opened up normal and he turned around and started walking and he said, follow me. And I started looking around and we got to bigger parts of the underground base and there was like a bicycle leaning up against the wall and like a golf cart off to the side. So I guess if you had to go deeper into the base, you could just jump on a bike or, a golf cart. And we were gradually kind of walking downhill the whole time. And eventually we got to an area that was like a, like a catwalk going like a, going up the wall, like three steps going up the wall. And there was like one of those watertight doors with the handle and everything like that seals the door. And we walked into this room and it looked almost like a gas chamber chair. I saw a gas chamber when I was a kid and it really scared me. I saw like a gas chamber chair and it gave me like a kind of like messed my head up seeing something like that as a kid. And when I saw that, I just thought, oh, this thing's trying to kill me. Like, this is a gas chamber. It's a sealed door. There's this chair with straps on it. It wants to like gas me or something. So I tried to run out and it grabbed me and threw me back into the chair. Like I weighed 5 pounds and it started strapping me in and I was fighting against it and it had like its hand on me and it was kind of using its other fingers to hold my hand down to the chair, to the arm of the chair. And it strapped my right hand in. And I grabbed its thumb and I kind of pulled it up. And I remember its thumbnail was like black and either side kind of rolled into itself. So it was like a regular nail at first. And then it became like needles, like long black needles. And I think it headbutted me or hit me and knocked me out for a second. And when I came to, my right side, my right leg was in and my right arm was strapped in. And I kind of like got off the chair. It was really big, like it was meant for one of them. And it was really big. And I found out later that like these density chambers were invented by reptiles. They're fork density beings. And I found out that Third density beings have the ability to go up one density naturally through like astral projection and things like that. Because the fourth density is kind of like the spirit world. It's like a lower fourth is like reptiles and archons, and upper fourth are like other things that you hear about, like gnomes and fairies and things. They're kind of in this spirit realm. So we have the ability to go up one density, but the reptiles don't. They can't go from fourth to fifth naturally. So they invented this density chamber. Because fifth density is kind of like where the movers and shakers are, like, you know what I mean? Where it's like the center. Ninth density, I was told, is the highest we know. I was told that ninth density beings don't know anything higher than ninth. He said the executive officer told me this. There could be something higher than ninth, but we don't know of it. And so fifth is kind of like almost in the middle. And that's where a lot of them, like these reptiles, they want to be able to compete with the fifth density beings, so they are automatic. Artificially push themselves up in the fifth. And I was still fighting against it in the chair, and it kind of put its hand against my chest and pushed me back in. And I felt its fingers here, like its hand here. That's how big it was. And it leaned in close to me, and it kind of growled almost like an alligator's kind of mating call, if you've ever heard that, where you can't hear it, but you could feel the percussion, the rumble in your chest. And as it got closer, I could hear the growl, and he said, "Don't make me hit you again." And when he got right in my face, I shoved my thumb in its eye, because I was like, I thought, you know, this it looked like it was like a living alligator to me. It was like a living, like big humanoid reptile, and you could see kind of the teeth hanging out a little bit, and it was frightening. And it just kind of leaned back and pushed against my chest till it caved in my chest and like pushed against my heart, and I just blacked out. And then when I woke up, all the straps were in. I remember it said, "I'm sorry, I have to do this to you." And it went to like a control panel area and started working on a control panel. And then it walked out, tightened the door. And I was like hyperventilating. I thought I was like going to be gassed. So I thought maybe if I pass out, it won't hurt as much. So I was trying to kind of make myself pass out through breathing. And all of a sudden, I felt like an immense pressure. And then I felt, to the point where I was like painful. It was like a lot of pressure. And then I felt kind of like an astral projection, because I could do it like in my mid-teens. I remember how it felt. It was almost like a weightlessness, cold, and then like complete peace almost, it felt like. Like I could kind of feel my consciousness kind of coming out of my body as I was being pushed up in the fifth density. And then I came to, and I looked to the right, and there were like three guys. It looked like they got picked up from a club. They were wearing just like button-up shirts, and they were sitting laying on a mattress on the ground of this density chamber. And I guess maybe they got recruited too. I think they probably kidnapped people, maybe in bars and things like that, to join these programs. And I saw what looked like a Gestapo, but it was actually a first-class petty officer on base, but he was an off-world German. This base had a lot of like off-world Germans that were kind of just Germany won World War II, and we don't realize that. Like the World War II was like the battle, and they won the war type of thing. The Germans went to they used channelers and things like that, and they got to Antarctica, where these other beings were telling them where craft was, and they took this craft and they took it to South America and they reverse engineered it. And they figured out how to make, you know, these ships by reverse engineering this craft, and they were, you know, channeling and things like that to these other beings. And yeah, he was like an off-world German. He has hair slicked back with pomade. He had like a 1940s undercut. He was blonde, had on like the trench coat and the boots. I slid out of the chair, and I remember the footrest hit me in the back because it was so high, like it was meant for one of them. And I kind of got to my feet, and I was swaying around. I was really out of it. I didn't know who I was. I didn't know what was happening. It was just colors were more in depth. You find yourself going down your own timeline sometimes in fifth density. It's a completely different reality. You can kind of go down into your own future and come back. And yeah, it's a completely different way of being as far as just everyday life. And I said something.
Just a quick
Yeah.
second. Hold that thought, Daryl. So, presumably you were still in the same place where the chair was, but a different density. So presumably, say like if a guard walked in there, they wouldn't be able to see this whole spectacle playing out because they were still in a third, whereas you and everyone else there were in the fifth.
Yes, correct. My XO told me that, and he said that like this reptile is probably wearing maybe some sort of a belt. They have belts that can kind of like nerf you almost, where you seem like you're third density, but you're not. But he said that if I was to take this belt off, I would just look like a maybe a blur of light to you. Maybe you wouldn't see anything at all. Yeah, because they're so fast, and it's not like they're, it's just a different, a higher realm. It's like a higher reality. I can't
Another
really
rock
explain
of
it.
above or two.
Yeah,
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 cool. Yeah, please continue. Didn't want to interrupt your train of
yeah,
thought.
yeah. And then, I got to my feet, and I said, first thing I said is like, "Can I go to bed now?" It was like the first thing that came out of my mouth, and I fell down to my hands and knees. And I saw, the German's boots coming from front of my line of sight. And I heard him say something like, "I should have you executed for what you did to my man. Do you hear me?" And then the reptile said, "It doesn't matter. He doesn't remember." And I just fell over on my side, and I lost consciousness. And I woke up, and it was like carrying me, the reptile, like a duffel bag, where, my head was facing to the back, and he was just carrying me under his arm. And it was right on my bladder, and I said, "Hey, I have to pee. Can you put me down? I have to pee." And the reptile didn't say anything. I said something like, "I'm going to pee on you." And I just fell back asleep. And I remember seeing a bright light, which I found out later was a looking glass portal. And it took me into the moon. And I got placed on like a medical table, like a regular medical table with the bars, but it was kind of wide and long. Like it could have been made for a reptile too. And I remember seeing like the lights, like the surgery lights, LEDs, a bunch of LEDs on a very round, big round thing. And I heard like ripping and tearing. And the reptile set me on the bed, and he said to this woman, she was a nurse, and her name was April. She was actually like an IT, like computer tech on base. I guess she joined the program and wound up being a nurse, like on the moon, and or in the moon. And he said he has to urinate, and I heard a long tear, and she put a catheter in me. And she was putting like heart monitor stickers, what it seemed like on my chest, almost like giving me a physical. And I saw her, and I said, "You're pretty." I was kind of like a little kid. I just said whatever the first thing that came in my head. It was just like it was like I was reborn, is what it felt like. And I said to her, "You're pretty." And then I heard another one of the women like going, "Ooh," or something like that. And then I said, "Can I hold your hand?" And she said, "Give me a minute. I have to do some stuff." And she was doing other things. And she's like, "All right, give me your hand." And I gave her my hand, and I just fell asleep. And then I woke up in the same room by myself. Nobody was there. I woke up the next day, and she walks in. She had like a bag, and she placed a bag on a table. And then at first, she brought out a smart glass pad, which is kind of like what the smartphone's based off of. And it's like a plexiglass computer. It looks like a piece of plexiglass. And you place your hands on the corners of it, and like images will come up. And it kind of like it makes a telepathic link with you. Most ET tech, it makes like a telepathic link. And that's why they look for people with higher IQs, because they have the potential of, telepathy, looking down timelines, things like that. They have like a greater potential for that. And yeah, she was just basically giving me a physical. Like she pulled out an image of like a humanoid person, and then you could see like the circulatory system, and then she could put her hand in and open it up, and it would like zoom in on the heart or the brain. And then she was about to leave. And she was done for the day, and she was about to leave. And I said, "Where are you going?" She's like, "I'm going home. Don't worry, I'll be here tomorrow." And I didn't want to be in this room by myself again for another half a day. And I just stood in front of her, and I took her hand, and I said, "I don't know what to do or say. All I know is I don't want you to leave me." And she liked that, and she, grabbed my hand, and we took me out. And it looked like changing of shifts. It kind of looked like we were in like a lobby of a condominium, where you could see like the floors. There was like five or six floors, and when you looked up, there was just like a bright light. And there were like these four lifts going up from the floor, and they would go straight up, and they'd take someone directly to their home, and then come right back down and wait for someone else to get on. And behind me, there were like these trains, and these guys that were wearing like like gray coveralls kind of thing were going into these trains, and there was women on a different floors of all these floors, and some of them had babies or children, and they were waving goodbye. And so she took me to one of these lifts, and it went up, and it went directly to her floor. And I remember there was a woman standing on the sidewalk on the top floor, and there were no railings. And she was holding a baby, and I said, "Aren't you afraid you're going to fall off?" And she said, "Oh no, you can't fall off." And she just stepped off. And she said there was like these fields on every floor to where you can't like fall off. And I said, "How far does it go?" She goes, "All the way to the other side." She said the children play on it. And they're not supposed to, but they do sometimes. And then I went into her room, and it was very Spartan. It was just like a couch, a table, a bar area, a table to the left, like bathroom, bedroom area. And she put her bag down and grabbed my hand, and we went into her bedroom. We sat on the bed and we started to kiss. And then she said, "Wait, what's your name?" And I said, "I don't know," because my head was just kind of out of it. And she said, "Think, everybody remembers their name." And I thought about it and I said, "Daryl." And then we had sex. And then when I woke up, I mean, I was on the kind of like the head of the bed, and she was laying on my chest. And I just kind of like dozed off. And when I came to, I was back in England. And that's like how it felt to me. And I was like, what the heck? I was with a woman, like I was saying that, and I got up, and my uniform was like laying on a chair in front of me, and like facing my bed, with like my slacks draped over the chair, and then my shirt, and then my tie, and then my shoes were tucked under, facing me under the chair, and I still had my black socks on. It was like something I wouldn't do, to go to sleep. I would have put my clothes away in the closet, and I wouldn't have had my socks on. And I got up, and I was kind of panicking, and I was running my fingers through my hair, as you do when you're kind of like upset. And I looked at my hand, and there were like burnt stubble of hair, in my hand. And I rubbed my hand down my chest hair, and there was burnt stubble. And I noticed I was a lot bigger. My forearms were huge. I wasn't like extremely big, but I was a lot more like in shape. I was a lot more toned than I was before. And I had clay on the tops of my feet, and I couldn't explain why did I ha how did I get clay, even though I had these socks on. How did I get clay on the top of my feet? And when I came out, there was like a guy waiting for me, who was one of the guys who used to play like Halo with us in the barracks. And he was just kind of like leaning against the wall, almost waiting for me. And he said, "Congratulations, you made it." And I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "20 years is a long time. A lot of people don't make it." And then it was just all these strange events, because I still had 2 years in this command. You know what I mean? And I really didn't have a lot of memories. I remembered certain things. I remember the very beginning. And that's what the first class petty officer, he even told me, the guy who got me into the program. He said, "Some people will remember the first day or two, but that's it." And I remembered like the first couple days. And I went into the bar on base. There was like this trailer they converted into a bar right on base, and it had a grill. And there were always these four guys there, and they were British Army. And I found out later they were Satanists. And when I walked in, this one bald-headed guy that I call the goon, he was really big and he had a shaved head. And he goes, "Hey, it's the king of the Tigetans. Hey, man, Aquino fucked you up. He had me doing everything. I was smashing your toes, and he burned you alive. And he was just telling me all this stuff, and I didn't know like what he was talking about. I had no clue of what he was talking about. And I had like a horrible depression. Horrible. I never felt anything. I never really had depression before. I've been sad and things like that, but I mean like." It was like I had the flu, but I wasn't sick. It was like my bones ached and my joints hurt. It was like I was so sad, like it hurt my body. It felt like I was ill, but I had no fever. And that lasted for months, a long time. And I don't know if I ever really got over it. Just got used to it. But we had the 4th of July party on base, and I was making like hamburgers and hot dogs. And I was putting them on the buns and and putting them on the plate and giving them to the people that were waiting in line. And the XO came up with his daughter. And she was pretty. She was, blonde, blue-eyed. She was about, I think, 19, and I was like 26 at the time. And The XO came up with his daughter and said, "Hey, Petty Officer James, I'd like to introduce you to my daughter." And I talked to her, and I asked her if she was doing anything tomorrow, and she's like, "Ah, oh, no, I don't think so," and just kept moving on. And then the XO came up to me and he said, "Petty Officer James, do you play guitar?" And I said, "Well, I used to, sir, like years ago." And he's like, "You should think about taking that back up." And he just walked away. And I just thought it was strange, for like a captain to introduce his daughter to, me, a petty officer, which that doesn't, it's very classist in the Navy as far as officer and enlisted. And yeah, it was just a strange thing. And all these other strange events would happen on the base. And I would go to that bar a lot because it was just these guys. It was strange. It was cheap beer. It was like a pound, which was cheap in England, which was like $2 at the time for like a beer. And it was only these four guys. And me. And the only reason I would go is because, the goon would get drunk sometimes and tell me things. He would get drunk and you'd tell me things. And one time he told me we were watching Mission Impossible with Tom Cruise. And the guys on base told me this as well. They're like, they let Tom Cruise into the underground base of St. Maugham, JMFRAF St. Maugham, like Joint Maritime Force, Royal Air Force. And I asked why, and they said they didn't know. So I figured maybe it was just for like a movie role, because sometimes they'll leave Hollywood people into like underground or submarines and things like that to film movies. So I thought he was just doing it for a movie role. And I'm back at this bar with the goon, and we're watching Mission Impossible, and he's like, "I got to meet Tom Cruise last night or yesterday." And I said, "How?" And he said he bought adrenochrome from me. And I said, "What's that?" And he said, "It's a drug. You get it from kids." And he was just kind of explaining it to me. But it was just so crazy that I didn't think that, when you hear something just that crazy, you don't believe it. Like people torture children, I found out later that, they're like stacked in cages, like kennels almost, and they're feral, and they're pure white, and their eyes are very dilated because they never see the sun. And they electrify the cages, and then they pull the kids out, and they strap them to a table, and they give them like a spinal tap at the very top vertebrae next to the skull, and then that's how they extract it out.
Just
And
hold that. Just hold that thought a second. I had a horrific experience one time on board a large vessel where I was being chased by Tom Cruise, and he was dressed in a khaki naval officer's uniform. And when I looked at him, I didn't see Maverick. I saw Lestat, right? And he was like pale. His skin pallor was pale, and his hair was like a little longer than it should have been for an officer, and the bastard chased me through this vessel, and some chief petty officer hid me in a compartment somewhere. It's a long story, but anyway, please continue.
Yeah, and that was like, my XO, he told me a lot of stuff before I got in the Navy, and he told me that when he did that thing with "I'm in love with Katie Holmes" on Oprah, and he was like jumping almost on top of Oprah and kind of grabbing her hands, and "I'm in love with Katie Holmes," he said he just got done doing adrenochrome before that, because that's like how it makes you act. It's almost like you're on cocaine or something. It's like a very euphoric, like
What
speedy
the XO
high.
said?
The XO, yeah, Robert, yeah, he was my executive officer of it. He was a cat, the guy who interviewed me initially for the program, who asked me if I wanted to join.
He was a user of it.
No, not the XO. No,
Oh,
Tom Cruise.
the Satanist British guy.
Oh, the British guy did it every day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I
Okay.
guess that's one of the perks of like harvesting it, is you get to do it every day.
Okay.
And yeah, it does things. I was in the bar with him one time, and the XO explained to me that, it heightens abilities. It can make you telepathic if you're not telepathic, adrenochrome. It can, energy vampire. I remember that this guy, this goon at the bar, I remember one time I felt like a pull come from him. And the lighting of the bar seemed to go down like 40%, like it seemed to get dimmer, like in the entire bar that we were in. And I felt this pulling coming from him, and it was like he was draining my energy. And I looked over at him and he said, you know those waves that you feel? He's like, you ever done acid? And I said, well, I've done mushrooms. And he said, you know those waves that you feel that they feel like they're coming down from the universe and you just feel wave after wave? And I said, yeah, I used to call those echoes. And he goes, echoes, that's a good word for it. He said, well, they live between the echoes. And I said, like, who? And he's like, all of them, like the reptiles and the Nordics. They live between the echoes. And he said, you could see between the echoes. He said, you could see a kino, and he didn't like that. So he went back in time and destroyed your childhood. And I really didn't know like what he meant. You know, I didn't know what he was talking about or anything like that. And he would say all kinds of strange things to me. He said he had to throw his clothes out because of me, and I said, why? He said, I got blood all over them, and he said, your blood. And it was just very strange things, and I just found it too hard to believe to accept it. And anyways, I was getting out of the Navy. I was getting into trouble and things like that. I was drinking more. There was something wrong with me. I couldn't figure out what it was. And so I was getting out, and you get to see the Master Chief of the base, the XO, and the CO before you get out of the military. And you can like say anything you want to them. You can't break the law, but you can call them a jerk or whatever, and you can't get in trouble for it. You can't threaten them or anything like that. But yeah, and I just saw the Master Chief, and he was a overweight guy, and I went to the XO's office, and I opened up the door, and he stood up from his desk like very slowly, and he looked sad. And he just appeared at the end of his desk. Like I couldn't explain it. And I thought maybe I had a stroke. I was like, did I just lose 3 seconds of my life? And then he just appeared right in front of me. And I took a step back. And then I heard in my head, I heard him say, can you hear what I'm saying to you? And it's something that like fifth density beings do, where they want you to know that this isn't just the voice in your head, that this is real, like this is someone else talking to you. So they want a physical gesture. And he said it again, can you hear what I'm saying to you? And I nodded my head, and under my breath, I said, yes. And then he said, what do you remember? And I said, and it just, as I was talking to him, like things were coming back. I don't know if it was because he was fifth density, it was this memory seemed to, and I always had this lingering memory that I couldn't explain when he said, what do you remember? And I said, I remember a woman tall. She was sitting down. She had long silver hair, big blue eyes, big cheekbones. She had a boy on her lap. I kissed the boy on the head, and then I kissed her. And he said, that was mother. You had a son with her. And I said, I have a son. And he said, you have dozens of sons and hundreds of daughters. And I was just like, what? I didn't remember anything. And anyways, he just started telling me everything. And he was doing it to try to get me back into the chair. He was explaining to me. He said, Daryl, people that still have memories of the 20 year and back, they usually kill themselves within the first 6 months. He's like, this isn't going to be good. He's like, your life is not going to be good if you keep these memories. And so he was just explaining to me that like I was a king for like a few months on this world with these people. And I remember one time I was in the bar with the goon, and when I said, like, what are Tibetans? And he said, have you ever heard of Billy Meyer? And I said, yeah. And he's like, well, they're like the Pleiadians. You should check them out. Because this was like in 2004. And I looked at Billy Meyer, looked at some videos of his. And I said to the XO, I said, they're the ones they call the Pleiadians, right? And he said, yes. And he said, we call them Nordics. And I said, what did they call themselves? And he said, Tibetans. And he just started explaining all this stuff, and he was saying this to me, and he was losing me, and he could tell. And then out of the blue, he just said, I saw your father. And I said, how'd you see my dad? He's been dead for years. And he said, through the looking glass. And he explained to me that, like, looking glass technology, it's in all underground bases. Med beds are in all underground bases. Healing tanks are in underground bases. Age regression is in all underground bases. He said, there's a way you can go anywhere in time and view something, or you could step through the looking glass and you could step into that period of time. And he started saying things like, you know, he wore glasses, he rolled up the sleeves of his shirt, he was a mechanic, he raced cars, he moved to St. Petersburg, Florida in 1956. He like knew everything about him. So then I started to believe him. It was just like, well, I guess he's seen this. And he started explaining to me the I said, "What were the kids for, Robert?" I remember these kids in underground. I remember being drugged through an underground tunnel, naked, and I remember seeing kids in cages in these underground tunnels. And I kept on saying, "What were the kids for?" And he didn't want to say anything. I kept on repeating myself, "What were the kids for?" And he said, "Have you ever heard it? Have you ever seen the movie Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "You remember the adrenochrome scene?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Well, that's where they get it from." And then I said, "Well, how much did they take?" And he said, "A pint or two." And I said, "Some of those kids were like 3 or 4 years old. That would have killed them." And he says, "It does." And he said that they putting them in, they put the when the children die, they put them in something that looks like a wood chipper, and then they feed it to the other children, so it's like forced cannibalism. And if they do live long enough and they start showing signs of puberty, they kill them once they start showing signs of puberty because they don't have as many stem cells anymore. I guess you have a lot of stem cells before puberty. And he asked me if I ever heard of this, knew the band the White Stripes, and I said yes. And he said, "You know the song Little Ghosts?" And I said yes. And he said, "That song is about the children in the underground bases. So it's like, Little Ghost, the one I fear the most. Can you scare me up some love, adrenaline, fear, scare? Because of my condition," he says that his condition is if he stops doing adrenochrome, he'll die. Because it's like your body stops producing stem cells, and it needs stem cells to survive. And when you abuse adrenochrome for too long, like your body just stops making it, kind of like steroids. Like your body stops making testosterone if you take, steroids. And I thought I was holding a hand, but I was holding a glove. That's in the song. And he said that because they're in these cages for so long, they become like veal, and the sinuate doesn't connect properly to the muscle. So when you grab them, it feels like you could pull their skin like right off their arm or something. You know what I mean? It doesn't really connect properly because they never get exercise or they never get out of these cages. And yeah, he was telling me. Do you have any questions?
Just hold that thought. Just a quick question. Did you get the impression that these children were kidnapped off the surface, or were they born into the program, or a combination thereof?
Born into the program, yeah, he explained to me that the brothels in the mines of the moon, if the children didn't have high enough IQ scores, they would be taken through a looking glass portal in the moon and brought to these underground bases, and that's what they did with a lot of these children as a result from these brothels and things like that in the underground and inside the moon. And that's as far as I know where a majority of them come from, and that's what those brothels are for, pretty much. And yeah, he told me about this adrenochrome and all these politicians do it and movie stars do it and musicians do it. He said that Tom Hanks was like the kingpin of adrenochrome harvesting. And I kept on saying the guy from Big, I couldn't believe that. And he was, yes. And then he actually said that movie Big was about pedophilia. And I was like, how's that? And he's like, well, he was like a 12-year-old kid that was sleeping with like a 30-year-old woman, even though he was big. That was the whole subconscious premise of the movie. And he said that like the last movie he would do would be a Navy movie. So I think it was that one that came on Apple TV as a captain. And he said whenever he did the Elvis movie as the colonel, that was his brother. And he had a fat suit on. And I guess his brother sounds just like him. He did the voice for the actual toy for Woody for Toy Story when you pulled the string, because their voice sounds so similar to get royalties, from the movie and stuff. And yeah, he just started telling me that, we're working on it. He said the military's working on it. This is the fourth time they tried, I think. I think they had tried three prior times. People got caught, they got tortured, to give up the other members. They'd have to wait 10 or 15 years. They tried again, they got caught. And they were trying to basically free the earth from like the system that we're in right now, is kind of how he said it. And he said in his original timeline, like the original timeline for Earth, that Hillary Clinton won the presidency, and I guess there was like a in her second term, there was like a nuclear war, and the United States was like carpet bombed with nukes. and it was against China, and it was intended to be lost because China felt like it would take too long to try to invade the United States because, First Amendment, everybody's armed and things like that. So we got into a war that was intended to be lost, and we were carpet bombed with nuclear weapons. And then there was like these forced breeding programs for hundreds of years. And then they realized they made a mistake, so they tried to extract like a gene. They tried to hybrid the people and extract a gene. And it pretty much made like a Mike Pence looking people. And he said, "You think I look like Mike Pence?" And you're right. And I said, "Well, who's Mike Pence?" But he was looking down my timeline because he said he was from the year 2580. He was genetically augmented in the womb to be very telepathic, to be very like to be able to look down timelines, all this other
XO was
stuff.
telling you.
I'm sorry, the
He's
XO.
XO was telling you this about
Yeah,
himself.
Robert was his name. Yeah. And I said that they all have that constant scowl on their face like you do. And he goes, "Yes, Mike Pence, he always has like a scowl, it looks like." And he said their hair is black, eyes are usually, brown, maybe blue or green. He said that when they turn 50 years old, their hair begins to salt and pepper. When they turn 60, it turns pure white. Their eyebrows turn pure white by 70. And then their average life expectancy is about 110. And I said, "Well, that's, horrible." I said, "In Star Trek, they lived 120." And he said, "We didn't reach our true potential," is how he put it. And he said off-world Germans live over 800 years, and that's how long we're supposed to live. But because of, poisons in the air and the food and the water, everything about Earth, even our density, third density, it's kept artificially. We're supposed to be in fifth. And if we were at our true potential, we would live over 800 years, just like the off-world Germans. And yeah, he started, he told me these things, and he asked me if I knew the guys from South Park, and I said, "Yeah, Trey Parker and Matt Stone. I like South. I used to watch it." And he said, "Remember when they went to the Oscars?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Remember?" I said, "They went in drag and they were on acid." And he started to laugh, and he said, "That's because they hate them." And I said, "Who?" He said, "Hollywood. They hate them." I said, "Why?" And he goes, "Because they're scum." He said, "All of them are scum." And then he said that the adrenochrome episode on Star Trek, and it was also like the COVID-19 episode as well. It was like a two-part thing on the show. He said that that script was actually written by the military, like the good guys in the military, as like a way to kind of plant the seed of this is real, like adrenochrome harvesting is real. And it's like a way to try to like implant it into the subconscious so it's not as shocking to the people when they realize what's going on. And, yeah, I mean, go ahead.
So he was implying that he was part of this faction that wanted to turn things around, but at the moment, in terms of all these different converging timelines, it was kind of a case of go along to get along until they can start to turn this thing around.
Exactly. There's a positive and a negative polarity in every world. And it's almost like when the negative takes over, they realize the positive is necessary. They can't just kill them all off because there has to be like a polarity in the world. That, yeah, they basically just become like slaves to like the negative. And there are certain things they knew he wouldn't do, but then sometimes he had to like he hurt me when, being tortured and things like that, but he had to because it would have they would have tortured his daughter if he didn't. And so, they want you to have kids so they can hold your kids over you. Regular officers, they remember everything, but when you're enlisted and get put into officer, that's when you join the 20-year-in-back program and you get your mind wiped and everything. But like a certain group of high-ranking officers join this program and they keep all their memories. And he told me about Tom Hanks and he said the future is going to be so much better. He said they had to collapse the original timeline because of how horrible it was. And we wouldn't be able to go beyond fifth density, he said. And if a world stops evolving, it dies. And I said, "How does the world die?" And he said, "Rivers dry up, lakes dry up, the oceans begin to dry." He said, "A world just dies if it stops evolving." And I asked, was your mission successful? And he said, yes. And I said, well, what about your parents? And he said, my mother's gone, my father's gone, all my brothers and sisters, my friends. And I said, why are you still here? And he said, I don't know. And he had like no idea why he was still here. And I said, well, what about your wife? And he said, no, she's from this time. And I said, well, what happened to your daughter? And he looked very terrified. And he said, I don't know. Like he really didn't know what was going to happen. For some reason, he was still here, even though he was never born. Like, his parents never existed. So it didn't make any sense. But I guess because he was like kind of like in the fold of our timeline or something like that, it protected him. I'm not really sure. But,
Hold that thought. We've come to the end of the first segment. It's been fascinating, and there's so much more to unpack. Could you let our listeners and viewers know how they can find your work online?
yeah, sure. My website is darryldjames.com, DarylD as in Delta, James.com. And I'm about halfway through a book right now, so I'm working on that right now.
Thanks for that. And for our dear listeners out there, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.